Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. They offer just about every battery under the sun, from car and truck batteries to batteries for your trail cameras and rangefinders. Select retail locations even offer cell phone repair and cracked screen repair. Find a local retail location at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you. All right, guys, welcome back to another Land and Legacy Podcast. We are recording not over the phone this week, or this podcast this week. You'll probably heard from the other podcast we recorded with Dr. Will Goolsbee. That was an exciting research-filled podcast. And so if you haven't checked it out, make sure you do. Wonderful, wonderful information. But this week, I'm sitting on the back porch, and I've got Chad Keith on the line, not on the line, on the headset right here. How are you doing, Chad?
Not too bad. It's been good. It's been a little while.
It certainly has.
We've been.
Yeah.
A little swamped.
Well, I recorded a little video for Instagram this afternoon, looking over a future pond site, and the hay was getting cut. And I just, like, opened up the video and was like, guys, I apologize. We're trying to give as much updates as we can, whether it's on the podcast or these quick little videos. But between all the things that are happening on your guys' place, my house, and my place, as well as you're working full-time still, we're both working and traveling, there's just so much happening. It's like trying to get these updates out and still have good quality content, but
we're just running
full steam ahead.
When Adam mentioned to me doing this with you, he was like, yeah,
you've
had a little more time on the farm than
right.
I have.
Right.
We've kind of been, most of the summer, him and I have been working together, trying
right.
to knock out fence, trying to get stuff, not habitat related.
Right.
I mean, somewhat, but
yeah.
It's not interesting
as,
to
not
most
as
people.
Direct.
And finally, we got enough of that done to where it's like, okay, we can divide and conquer. And I went to the wildlife stuff, and Adam's still
right.
working on fence. He's like, you've seen more of the farm than I have. Give an update.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. No, I think it's also always good to give the updates, because, you know, as everyone's listening here, we're making the same decisions that are in the same shoes or boots as you guys as to how we want to progress forward with a given property. And, you know, it's fresh, it's new. There's these big decisions to make, and execution, of course, we're pretty concise, I think, when we make the decisions as to what it is we're going to do, but don't be fooled as you're listening that there's still considerations and long-term projections, and do we take this route or that route? And there's just a lot that goes into it, but I want to also stress with that, there's not waffling back and forth as to should it get done. It's more of how and what's the best approach.
Yeah.
This is the end goal. How are we going to get there the best way? And this podcast, we're going to give you guys a couple updates, but then we're going to let Chad talk about the approach to marking timber and how to go about that logically, strategically, to make sure that through a harvest, and Adam's talked about the harvest and kind of like long-term vision, let's say, that you guys are trying to accomplish. I think that was a week ago or 2 weeks, but this is going to be more or less the nuts and bolts of here's how we make sure that we achieve that. And there's right ways to go about it and wrong ways. And so before we jump into that, let's give a quick shout-out to Vortex Optics. Guys, it is late summer, target shooting, scouting, summer scouting. Make sure before we get into season that you are outfitted with some good optics. We just had some optics come in. They're pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
they're pretty razor sharp. Some good glass in that. So we're pretty excited for this season. Not that we've had time to scout, but when it is go time, we are prepared and set and ready to rock and roll. So I'm excited. So make sure you guys go check out vortexoptics.com. And if you like some of their clothing, use the code LEGACY20 at checkout for their apparel line. You won't be disappointed. All right, Chad. So
it's funny you talk about haven't had time to scout. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, we've had, you know, normally we're running cameras, all
sure.
that. And it was one of those, I've laughed when the Fed buddy's like, hey, you guys got any good bucks on camera? And it's like, we don't have any cameras out.
Yeah,
and they're like, huh?
Cameras.
I'm like, we don't have a camera out right,
right
now.
Right, right.
And it's just funny that we've had so much going on that it's.
And I don't think that's like, I don't feel, let's say, behind the eight ball with that equation,
no.
though, either, that things have been busy. I think now we've got cameras. They're set up. They're ready. They're if they're not deployed, they're getting ready to be. And it's like, today's August 1st. We've got time.
Yeah.
We've got plenty of time. And for the properties that we're hunting outside of my new place, which is very small and easy to figure out, right? The lease, the 160 where I harvested the buck last year, and your guys' place, I'm going to say we've got it figured out, but I'm not going into it blind.
Yeah.
Like I have a year and plus Seth's knowledge of it to rely on, and I'm not worried about it. I did get a picture of a good 10-pointer on that place. I had one camera on it through the middle portion of summer, and it's pulled now because the cutty link's getting ready to get set out maybe tomorrow. But regardless, I don't feel behind the eight ball at all.
And, like, we've got the family farm
yep.
that obviously we've hunted our whole lives.
Right.
And then the farm we bought is
right.
in the process of being logged. So
right.
stuff is going to change.
Absolutely.
So it's like you throw some cameras out, but we really don't.
Yeah.
It's not, like, it's intense.
It's not a to begin making plans.
No.
It's a... Okay, there's some good deer here.
Well, and
cool.
And honestly, it's one of those that all the stuff we've been getting done
yeah.
is far more important
far.
Because
yeah.
for years to come, the benefit in our hunting is going to be so much better. I mean,
oh, yeah,
Adam and I were laying out, and we'll have some videos of the stuff we're doing. It's so detailed in. I mean, we talk about, we're going to touch on the marking and how we're doing it, but
yeah,
we were taking it down to. Mark and leave trees for future tree stand trees.
Specific. I know based on terrain and what the future habitat condition is going to be that tree is a killing tree. Don't
yeah.
touch it.
and not just that tree is the killing tree, but, you know, if we mark that tree and those two trees behind it, it gives us back cover.
Sure.
Or if we leave this one in front, it's going to give us some more cover so that when they come through on this bench.
Sure.
It's
or hey, there's some more seed trees, acorn producing trees in close proximity. Now that's our hunting tree. We can access here off this new road that will be here. The list goes on and on. But yeah, I mean that's the cool part of having change and evolution to a property and transforming it is that you can be big scale. Big thinking, I'm going to achieve this long term, but you can also be fine-tuned in that same process, in that same breath of, I will be killing deer out of that tree.
Well,
just wait.
And let's face it, for us, yeah, the deer, the turkey, that whole thing is a big part of it.
Yeah.
But there's just as much excitement or more about the habitat accomplishments
mm-hmm.
and all of the restoration work as far as like the glade. Adam and I got to check it out again yesterday.
Right, right.
And gosh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's just evolving so much. And we found
sure.
found royal catch fly again.
Right. So
another
and for those
spot.
Listening, that's a describe that native flowering plant to them
it's
real
a,
quickly.
It's a red
yep.
like it's almost star shaped.
Yep.
A red plant that blooms late summer. It's one that hummingbirds use a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Silene regia, or regia. I'm not sure how.
Something Italian.
We're from southern Missouri. But But it's a big pollinator species, but it's a rare species.
Rare,
you
delicate,
don't find
fragile.
It very often. And now this is the second spot we found it on.
Mm-hmm.
In the same cutting the trees back, opening the canopy, and starting prescribed burning. And it's one of those you start. I mean, we're very, very early into a lot of this, and we're already finding this stuff. And it's just like, what else is going to happen?
That's the most important thing. Many of these changes have occurred or begun to occur. The first start of it is less than 5 years ago. And some sites have seen multiple prescribed fires. Not that you guys didn't burn beforehand, but to the intensity of cutting and to the intensity of burning wasn't present.
Yeah.
And so to go in and basically just say, we're going in, not like Tasmanian devils, but it's no more like dip your toe in the pool. It's more like, I know what's going to happen. I need to make it happen. So it's up to me. Let's go. You dive head first into it. I think that's the differences in approaches. And I think that's the differences in why some folks who are doing land management, that was an air quote for anyone not right here sitting with us, but who are doing that and not experiencing high quality, desirable results. Did you dip your toe in, or did you dive in head first and go after it? Because this is wonderful sites that you can see incredible results in.
Yeah.
In a matter of 6 months.
We've seen three or four batches of poults now.
Mm-hmm.
On the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's like all of these things that we're doing, it's not just, I mean, you can do some things and let deer grow and kill some good deer.
Right.
But you're not going to see all of these other wildlife benefits.
Yeah.
And not to mention plants and everything. And I mean, we're seeing so much of that, and that's what's been exciting, I guess, to think as I've been marking these trees, to go through this stuff that is severely closed canopy. I mean, severely closed canopy. And know that we've done some small areas, and to see what is happening in those, and know, oh, this is going to get really, really good around here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And quickly.
And I'm glad you said quickly, because that's the difference between, again, head first diving in and just getting it to where it needs to be, opposed to take a little here. Come back in two years, take a little bit more. Guess what? In those 2 years, those trees grew, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, you got some benefit, but did you get enough to experience what you could? No, and if you don't get enough experience as you begin and as you start, then you're not going to continue at the same rate, the same speed, the same intensity, the same level, degree, whatever you want to say. You're not going to do it nearly as good. You just got to go after it.
Let's face it, a lot of the stuff that we're seeing right now would be scary to most people.
Oh, yeah.
To walk in, to own a patch of land and walk in and be like, oh.
Change.
This looks like a disaster.
Right.
It does.
Right.
But we have enough foresight to know that, okay, it's a process. You have to go through this to get the desired result.
That's right.
And there's a lot of this where it's like, I don't know if I even told you, I found more cylindrical blazing star in the glade.
Not like in the woodland?
On the west facing slope that we burned.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like where I found more pale purple coneflower.
Mm-hmm.
I found cylindrical down through there.
Wow. That's cool.
So it's like, what all is going to happen on that hillside?
Absolutely.
We've had
absolutely
a logging and one burn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And we're already seeing that.
Yep.
What's going to happen when we get our TSI
right
on that? We've already seen the one slope. We've got so many of those where it's one that's like, you look at the logging as they're doing it, and it's a disaster, but you're like, okay, it's as we go, we're going to see more and more change and more benefit.
Let's be really real here. Come on, guys. We know it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
It's a logging operation. Well, they're physically cutting trees. They're dropping them. There are some trees that get damaged in the process. And then they take the tree and they skid it out. And hopefully they get to a nice straight skidding trail. But let's be honest. They can't take a straight path in hilly ground. So there's going to be some damage outside of the trees that they're cutting and hitting that's going to happen. But in a site like this specifically, and this crew isn't, I wouldn't say, they're not like a haphazard crew or you guys called them back after they've logged here previously. So it's like they're doing the best that they can. But are some of the trees that they're hitting or damaging, are they of great value? No, probably not, right? No. You could see a couple tops get broken or one get snapped off like 15 foot up, but was that tree even healthy in the first place?
Well, and, you know, I was discussing with the logger the condition of the timber. You know,
yeah.
A lot of people here in southern Missouri, there's a lot of places similar to this where it's, yep. You know, there's a lot of people sitting on over mature timber that think they're the mindset that's, you know, I'm sitting on an investment.
Right.
The longer I sit on this, the more money I'm going to make.
Right.
Well, this place, for example, there's places that have been logged within, it's probably 40 years now. Even smaller trees yeah. that are not saw timber value.
Sure.
Hollow as a gourd.
Right.
I mean, you go through the timber and it's what, like, especially the big black oaks,
mm-hmm.
a large percentage of them have rot in the center.
Would you say, when you say large percentage, what percentage specifically do you think have some portion of a rotten center that is not of high quality log lumber value?
Over 50% for sure.
Right. 60%?
Yeah, at least, I would say. I mean, you walk through there, there's a ton of them that have, I mean, there's red oak borer. There's all mm-hmm. kinds of different mm-hmm. things that they're suffering from. And not to mention, it's closed canopy. They're severely competing with each other. It's one of those that it's stacked against them. And it's like, so a tree like that.
Yep.
And not to mention people that are just, they're just sitting on them because it's, well, I need acorns. I got to have acorns for my wildlife. And it's like, how many acorns is that tree producing?
When the top of that tree, that canopy of that tree is about the diameter of the tree trunk itself, and I know that's an exaggeration, but when you know what a healthy tree should look like, and these trees are, and canopy specifically, are half the size of that, if not more, you, how can it be that healthy of a, or a, yeah. a large mass producer? It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. And it's, there's a lot of it. You go through the timber and it was one, I mean, I've got enough experience in the timber cutting industry.
Yep.
Through my job that, you know, you look at a lot of stuff and I can look at the trees and see if they're suppressed, if they're unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
You see a lot of signs of decline, and especially these black oaks, because they just don't live as long as the sure. white oak family. And you walk through and, you know, I told the logger, I said, I have marked leaf trees. I really didn't mark many red oak, any of the red oak family.
Right.
Black oak, northern reds.
And I will make this clear, that is a timber quality, log value, a monetary decision, opposed to a mass production. It's not like from a wildlife, you're saying, I don't care about red oaks, they're not important, the red oak family, I only care about promoting white oaks.
Yeah.
That's not that decision. It's more or less, what's the current state of them? What's the long term? Do we have enough time? Or do we need to take what we can get right now?
The logger's words for our place was, it really needs a complete makeover.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, you know, most of these trees are at least have some rot in them.
Uh-huh.
And it's like 10 years from now, how many of them would even be alive?
Certainly.
I mean, so that was where, and we'll get into how we marked.
Mm-hmm.
That was where most of this place we're marking leaf trees. I've got orange paint. I'm marking leaf trees and picking the trees for him to leave. And we've pretty much told him, if it's not marked leaf tree and you can get something out of it, cut it. It's like, cut everything you can get that's not marked in orange.
Okay. So as we're getting into this portion of the podcast, everyone, if you didn't listen to the podcast that Adam and I recorded talking about the different long-term visions or the primarily three different types of harvest that were going to occur, maybe three intensities would be a better way. We talked about clear cutting. We talked about a seed tree harvest and then backing off or easing off some of the harvesting on the north and east facing slopes for those for the different reasons. So if you want to learn about that, go back a couple weeks and listen to that podcast, because today you're going to talk about, okay, now that we've made that decision, this is how we, bare bones, just elementary, this is how we marked it. And there's a logical, strategic way about going about that. So break down, Chad, because, you know, through your job professionally, you've marked thousands of acres of timber for sales,
yeah.
Right? And so you have tons of experience of marking ahead of a logging operation and a sale. So kind of walk us through those different scenarios that you played out in your head and then actually went to the property and put paint on the trees. Why, how do you make those decisions ahead of a logging operation? What kind of communication may you need to have with that logger after it's marked?
So our place is, this place is 100% hardwood. It's all hardwood timber.
Yep.
That's what it is.
There's no pine, is what you're saying. Yep.
A majority of it, I'm trying to think. There's portions of it that have been logged in probably the last 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
The ridge tops and stuff. They've done some logging in the easy to reach stuff.
Yep.
And then there's areas down off the hills that have a lot more age on them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that. We don't know how old they are.
Yeah.
But they're larger timber. A majority of it is black oak,
mm-hmm.
because of previous loggings and stuff. Most of it's black oak in there.
Because maybe they preferred or selected heavy white oaks in the past.
Yeah. And it could have been something where they cut most of the white oak, and then the black oak just regenerated. It grew well there.
Right, right.
And it's old enough that most of it is declining.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you walk through the timber, there's some big black oaks, but most of them have large dying limbs in them.
Right.
You can just tell they're declining. So our goal in this is to, we're essentially salvage cutting all of the black oak.
Yes.
Most of the black oak is going to go.
Define real quick salvage cutting.
Salvage cutting is it's trying to make use out of what's there.
Because
trying
it's going downhill,
yes.
So fast. A salvage cut, sometimes, like I've heard that term used maybe after a tornado damage,
yep.
They'll go in and they will salvage what trees were down because they're not going to grow anymore. They're just going to lay there and rot if they don't get them. And essentially, these would continue to rot standing or degrade in yep. value standing, that you're salvaging them now.
They're only going downhill from here.
Right. There's no upward
so
trend.
So it's one, let's get all of everything we can out of those while we have some value left in those and start the regeneration process over.
Yep.
Ours was going to be a little different than most.
Yep.
A lot of people are just looking more for timber value. Obviously,
right.
We're more interested in wildlife value. So, like, we're going to look at the site index, which is an index of the quality of timber growing, like how capable of an area is of growing quality timber.
Yep.
Your south and west facing slopes are not going to grow as good as timber. Your north and east facing slopes are going to grow better timber.
Yeah.
So those areas I left thicker.
Mm-hmm.
I left them a little thicker. Now, there's still a ton of black oak on those.
Correct.
But the goal is to have those with a little higher basal area, mm-hmm. which is the thickness of the trees, how close they
right.
are. The south and west facing slopes, we're honestly going to do a lot of savanna woodland restoration on those.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is to have those more open.
Right.
And so we're going to, after the cut, it's going to have different management strategies on those.
Absolutely, yeah.
So a lot of those are taking mine. I'm leaving, honestly, a lot of that stuff, I'm leaving a 20 to 30 BA. So it's reasonably open. Now, the logger's not going to cut everything, so some of the others are going to come in still.
Yep.
But as far as the trees we want to leave, I'm leaving those pretty open, pretty far spaced, so that there's a lot of sunlight hitting the ground.
Right. and you're changing, you're salvaging the what you can out of the Black Oaks, and by selecting and hitting the Black Oaks harder, many of the trees that are being left are the white oak varieties that are going to have a longer lifespan, as well as in the future, when those are the trees that are most mature and have this much sunlight, and there will be prescribed fire on these sites as well, you're probably going to shift to, let's say, a less dominant black oak and to maybe a more balanced white oak, black oak, hickory type forest.
That's more of the goal, is to shift it to more, honestly, more diversity throughout our forest.
Right.
So I don't, I mean, obviously I'm not cutting every black oak. We're going to leave some of those.
Totally.
And that's what, if I could find one with decent shape in it, a lot of what our cutting would consist as like a seed tree cut.
Yeah.
Like if you're familiar with the term, it's a seed tree cut. We're leaving seed trees to hopefully restock everything else. So I'm leaving occasional black oaks that look good in places where there's not a nice white oak or post oak or a chinkapin. There's areas, some of the areas I went to had those. But we're marking those to hope to restock and have more diversity throughout.
So physically, how are you marking these?
So we've got a nail spot paint gun and Nelson...
Yep.
Marking paint.
This is not like a spray paint Home Depot deal.
Because this is a couple hundred acres.
Right.
So I told Adam from the start, I'm like, we've got to get the Nelson paint. I'm not doing a spray can.
And the paint lasts much longer on the tree.
It does.
Fading-wise.
It stands out better.
Yep.
If you're going to go about this, obviously consult a forester if you're not knowledgeable.
Sure.
But if you have timber knowledge... I'm marking, and I'm not doing stump marks on anything like we would at work. I'm just making an eye mark.
Okay. So talk about those two and why you might use one versus the other in those situations real quick.
So we aren't using stump marks because we trust the logger. We've worked with him in the past. A stump mark is one of those you can go through and check and make sure if they've cut. You can look and see if they cut a tree you didn't want them to leave, or if you're marking cut tree, you've got a stump there to where you can go through and make sure they cut trees that you wanted cut.
Right. So you essentially, if you're using a stump mark, you have a mark at eye level, and then you have a mark at the very base of the tree. And when they cut the tree and skid it out, there'll be a mark on the log that they've skidded out, as well as a mark on the base, the stump, that still remains. So a landowner can basically check the work and say, okay, the logger's not taking more than he should. So he should never go to a stump or a tree that's been cut out there in the field and not see a mark.
Yeah. And essentially, the stump mark is for you.
Yep.
The eye mark is for the logger.
Right.
And I use the eye mark. You can use the eye mark to make sure you're leaving adequate trees throughout the forest.
And it's easy for you to see, too, when you're marking. If it's obviously eye level, you can totally see it. So if they have a hand crew that's going out and cutting, they can see it easy. Or if they're in a machine, it's up high enough and not low that they can hopefully see it, too. Yeah. And they know, okay, I can drop this tree and go that way because over there is a leaf tree. I don't want to impact that one and drop it into it.
And that's essentially why I'm trying to make a good eye mark on the trees so that the logger can see. Because, I mean, he's in a piece of machinery.
Yep.
You want him to know for certain, okay, don't cut that tree.
Yep.
Don't cut that tree.
Don't cut
most
this
of the time,
into
like,
that one.
With the machinery they're using, they're going to cut on the uphill side.
Yep.
So if you want to save paint, you just mark the uphill side. So it can get kind of dicey. You do a lot of walking,
sure,
a lot of circles.
Right.
If you're wanting to make sure, if you're real particular, and we're particular, so I'm walking a lot of circles through the woods trying to make sure that I've got it to the spacing that I want. But and the stump marks, that you want to put those in crevices in the tree. You don't want it out there where the tire of the skidder is going to rub the paint off there.
Right.
You put it in the crevice of the tree at the base, like where a couple roots come together or something.
Sure.
So that it stays there. And that's the key on the stump marks, is so that when you go back through and check those, you can see them. The eye marks, it's, I mean, they're cut and dry, eye right. level, something.
I mean, foot wide, 6 inch wide, what's adequate? What most cutters, what are they going to look for? Say, okay, this is marked well. What's ideal? 4 inch strip band?
Inch or two wide across the whole length of the tree.
Yep.
That's kind of my goal. I've marked with people that marked. We made fun of them for pencil marks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the benefit of that nail-spot gun is
correct.
You can just walk through the woods and a couple squirts on a tree, and it's yeah. a good standout mark.
Sure.
And with good paint, like this orange stands out pretty well. Mm-hmm. The blue stands out real well.
Yep.
It's a couple sprays with the gun yep. is plenty on those.
Okay. So you're marking leaf trees with that method. And specifically that's in that seed tree type cut. Now with a clear cut, how are you marking that?
With a clear cut, you can mark the boundaries.
Yep.
We've got some areas that we're clear cutting. I flagged those boundaries in.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them flagged in. Adam kind of touched on it, getting them an Onyx subscription.
Sure, absolutely.
And we have it marked on the Onyx.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, anywhere in there. And essentially, we wouldn't have to mark ours. Wouldn't have to lay out the boundaries because yeah. if we're doing all leaf tree, which we are, they get to an area and there's no leaf trees. They know.
Sure. Right.
I mean, if they get to a spot and there's no orange anywhere, yep. it's like, yep. okay, this is the clear cut. This is yep. a clear cut. There's nothing
right.
else.
The boundaries are kind of built in based on the other prescriptions yeah. on the property. But you chose to flag some just for that additional reassurance. And sometimes, honestly, too, when we're talking about that fine detail of knowing, okay, I'm going to hunt here, like this needs to be considered because if I'm going to clear cut and then grind stumps, I'm going to make this a food plot. I want my leaf trees and the boundaries of that food plot to not be completely naked and bare. I want to consider all that. So yeah. so that gives you guys not only the visual of, okay, here's the long-term boundary of an existing opening. How am I going to hunt this?
Yeah. And I mean, that was why Adam and I went out
right.
to check those. I was like, I need another set of eyes. I need somebody to stand on the edge of the bench and somebody else walking in. A lot of them, you can lay them out yourself.
Yeah,
a lot of the, you know, like Paradise Point, for instance, mm-hmm. that food plot. We're doing a food plot expansion on one side,
mm-hmm.
and then the other side, it's just a
herbaceous opening.
Yeah, it's going to be an yeah. herbaceous opening. Well, obviously, most people think you want, and we do have trees that I marked as leaf trees that are going to be tree stand trees on the side
yeah.
of the food plot.
Yep.
But we're obviously more excited about hunting the edge of these herbaceous openings
because sure.
you know there's going to be a lot of more daytime movement.
Oh, absolutely.
So like that one on the bottom corner, strategically set it up where there were three or four nice white oaks,
mm-hmm.
one double one, perfect
yep.
for a tree stand,
yep.
right on the edge of the slope,
mm-hmm.
like right at the drop-off. So we're going to walk up the slope, get in the tree stand. We're out of sight, get in the stand.
Yep.
We're on the
overlooking food plot and herbaceous opening.
Yeah. We're on the very south. We're on the south, southwest side of the opening. We can see out into the food. We're going to be able to see out into the food plot.
Yeah.
And then there are like two or three nice white oaks within 40 yards.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, we're on the edge of the opening. This like temporary opening, herbaceous opening, and have the ability to have white oak acorns dropping right next to us.
In close proximity.
Yeah, within 40 yards. So it's
yeah.
like, and on the downwind, so it's like, we're going to hunt that with a northeast or east wind, which we seem to have a lot of east winds, but
right.
have our wind dropping off the hill, and then all of those deer can be going, you expect bucks to cruise, downwind side.
Sure.
There's the availability of acorns, and they cruise around that edge of the opening right past us.
Sounds like a winning combination, you
yeah.
know? I mean, and that's the beauty of going through the process that you guys are going through right now and seeing you know, not only what it is currently, but the future of it, and that anticipation continues to build. Any other like secrets, tips, whatever you would say to someone who's planning on marking out spot ahead of a logging operation that they may need to know or may consider, what about roads? Have you guys marked any? Because that's a big value for ahead of a logging operation. You can kind of help, hopefully, work with that logging crew and have some roads begin to get established. You may need to go back and finish and you know, make it more of a permanent road when they're done. But you do get a little bit of say in that sometimes.
So
have you marked any roads?
We've laid out some roads. I flagged a couple of those.
Yeah.
I guess the other thing I'd forgotten about in Mark and League Tree, which we also marked some cut tree then in some stuff that had been cut previously.
Yeah.
We had some a buffer strip left, and I went back through and marked cut tree with blue to tell them, if you can get anything out of this, cut it.
Right.
Cut every one of these that are in blue, and they opened up a big swath. You haven't been through there, but
no,
they opened up a big chunk in there.
Yeah.
And that's what, if we were doing more of a select cut where it was like picking certain trees to cut, we would have done that.
Yeah.
For this, it works so much better to just mark leave tree. And for a lot of people, it's going to work better for leave tree.
Sure.
But one thing I kept in mind, because of my background, you know, you're tempted walking through. A lot of this is steep. There's a lot of benches that they're going to be cutting on.
Sure.
It's not just flat ground. You know, you're walking through the woods and it's like, boy, that's a really nice white oak. I want to leave that one.
Yep.
Well, that may be in the center of a bench.
Absolutely.
If you're going to mark that one, you've cut out every ability of that logger to go on farther down the bench.
Sure.
So there were trees that I'm like, that's a really nice tree, but there's a decent white oak here.
Yep.
I'm going to mark that one and leave them this one to cut so that they can continue down the bench.
Yep.
You have to take into account.
Do I want to save this one but give up four further down?
Yeah.
You know, that's
essentially what you're doing. You have to take into account the logger's mobility.
Ability to maneuver properly.
I mean, you also think about places where it's like, okay, if I mark this tree as a leave tree, they're going to have to skid by that.
Yeah.
And they're going to skid every bit of bark off of that thing.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, I can't mark that one and expect it to live.
Right.
You have to give the logger the opportunity to get into his place to cut that. So it's like there were a lot of the benches where it's like, okay, this one's off the slope. I'm going to mark that one.
It's not going to get damaged if I leave it. And it may not be the highest or, you know, side-by-side comparison, the better tree, but has a better chance of surviving and producing what you want down the road.
You know, let's face it, a lot of white oak and post oak are hollow.
Yeah.
A lot of big ones. So I didn't go into it marking every nice, really nice white oak. It was a good one. Because those hollow trees are perfectly capable of producing acorns.
Absolutely they are. Sure.
So especially in the white oak, post oak stuff, they live a lot longer. I mean, post oaks, a majority of big post oaks are hollow.
Yeah.
So I, a lot of times, if I saw
makes a perfect seed tree.
Yeah. If I saw something in the base where I'm like, I bet that one's hollow.
Yep.
I might mark it and let them cut a really nice white oak there beside it because there's more monetary value in that tree.
But long term, you get the same result as if you left one versus the other. But right now, you capture that monetary value, but still have, you know, the ability to repopulate, have acorns, mass producers, and that's out there.
Yeah. And you know, we've seen some of the stuff previously, and that was where we didn't mark leave tree. There was stuff where, you know, they might cut that tree down because they don't see that from the machine.
Certainly.
And then they get no value out of it. So that tree just got cut for nothing.
Yeah, totally.
And it's like, okay, if I see that it's hollow, I can mark it as a leave tree. It's going to produce acorns. And they can get me monetary value out of another log.
Yes.
If I leave it and they cut it, then it's just cut for nothing.
Right.
So.
And then you're left with a big hole.
So like I did that with those on the benches and stuff. You try to keep in mind, give the logger leeway so that he can move through. And then I also mark skid trails in with cut tree mark with the blue. I did vertical lines, but like in places that I knew, because we've covered every inch of this place, know the little sways and the benches and ways into places that there was timber. So I would go in and mark with blue a skid trail route for them to get into certain benches that I'm like, you know, they may not be able to find their way into that, especially when they're cutting trees. I'm going to give them an alleyway and show them how to make it into that.
Right.
So it's less damage trying to find their way in. I've taken them right there. Right. And they know, okay, here's the skid trail. They can go in and cut and strategically cut trees towards the back of that skid trail and use the trees that I left them to cut. Mm-hmm. That I didn't mark as leave trees, they can skid against those and protect my leave trees.
Right. And that's considered a bumper tree, right?
Yeah.
A tree that when they're skidding these longer logs out that are going to receive the damage, but they know they're going back into to cut them.
So they'll go through and go to the back of the unit and cut and then drag out. And they use those trees to protect your leave trees.
Yep. And I think that's where working with experienced people or a good quality forester, this is where you can get aggressive in a harvest but be very intentional with that aggressiveness. And I think a lot of people maybe who don't know or aren't educated or around timber management a lot or past cuts, they just go and they just see one thing, and they see open sky, they see some damage on trees, and they see trees on the ground and canopies, and they just think destruction, destroyed. Yeah. But there is a strategy, and there is a way to minimize the effects of a logging if it's done, marked, approached properly.
And that's where I think it helps us too. It's been a learning process with this logger.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's one we had him start. Previously, we didn't have any leave trees.
Yep.
It was one that's like, okay, cut. And it's like, why don't you do a little more, leave us a few more oaks, bigger oaks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it was like, okay, let's do this. And then this time it's like, okay, let's mark leave trees. It's like, we're going to mark leave trees. You cut everything else you want. But it's like, we're going to mark the leave trees so that we make sure that we have the trees that we want left.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, we're not leaving it up to them to decide and be like, oh, well, they should have left this one. Well, we didn't give them.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't have them any.
I made it
any,
clear, cut, and dry.
It's like, okay, we've got the ability to do this. Let's mark leave trees. We can, if the trees aren't left that we don't want, or if we don't have the trees we want left, it's our fault.
Right.
It's not
certainly,
their fault.
Certainly.
So it's one that it's been a learning process. And that's where it's like, if you have a logger coming in, you have the ability, if you have plenty of acreage.
Yep.
Have them some places that you know there's really not as much timber value that aren't as important to you.
Mm-hmm.
Have them start on that and learn
figure
with
it out.
Them, work with them to figure it out. You don't want to send them into your biggest prize piece of timber and it's like, oh, go in and cut. And then a week later you're like, oh,
they
didn't do what I wanted. Yeah,
there's that little bit of that learning curve to know how they work, the speed at which they work, that communication back and forth of making sure you're going to get the job that you want done. Don't go to the best areas first.
And you know, one of the biggest things is, remember, a lot of logging operations, it's pretty big machinery that's going to be on the timber.
Yeah.
You're going to have some skidded trees.
Absolutely.
Some skinned up trees.
Yep.
You're going to have some tree damage.
I think there just needs to be this expectation of that and realization going into it. And I think honestly, the bad name that loggers get would be a lot less if truthfully, and landowners, I guess we're speaking directly to you on this one. If you expect that,
yeah,
I mean, it's just impossible for them to do their job without that. It would be like a construction guy coming in to remodel a house and having to take out a couple walls. And I'm just thinking of like drywall dust. Like, if he's going to have to take out some drywall, re-drywall, sand drywall, the mud, everything, do you expect him to never have drywall dust on the floor of your home? You have to know that to make this better, there's going to be a phase or there's going to be a process where it does look ugly. There's mess involved in it.
I've never thought of it that way, but that's a pretty good analogy for what a lot of people see as logging is they go in and they stop after demolition.
Totally.
They stop after the demolition and they get the check and then walk away and complain that, oh, this looks terrible. It's like, well, there's some follow-up process you need to do.
Absolutely.
It's like, if you can do the TSI.
The job's not done.
And stuff
you just
like
quit.
That. And that's what, like, you know, some places, in some timber work, they drag the whole top with them.
Correct.
And they top and everything at the landing.
Yep.
And then they drag the brush back and put it in the skid trails and stuff. I prefer what we're doing because of the wildlife benefit.
Drop the tree, top it there, skid the log out itself, not the whole tree.
So the tops are scattered throughout the whole. I don't like to have a big pile of all of the slash everywhere that there are slash piles that burn real hot.
Yep.
We're going to kill enough trees with our fire as it is. I mean,
I'm
not going to light around the base of every big oak out
there. Right.
I'm not going to do that. That's not natural.
And you're managing, you're not managing for the individual. You're managing the forest. And that when you have to do that because of previous practices, it's time consuming and you're forced to look at individuals to accomplish what you want rather than a burn unit.
Yeah. Yep. So that's what our choice. They're topping them in the woods.
Yep.
And dragging the log out. So that there's going to be slash everywhere.
Yep.
I mean, I took some pictures today.
Yep.
There's slash everywhere. I know it's going to be that way.
Hey, but
I'm
guess
sure
what?
There's going to be deer bedding into this fall too.
Oh yeah, there will be. There will that will happen, and then two, they will be consumed by fire.
Yeah.
And that's the other, like, there's just slash for so long. Well, not if you stop there. I mean, if you stop there, there's slash for years. But
for us,
burning, there's not.
There's going to be slash again later when we TSI this.
Absolutely.
When we follow it up with another cut in it, there's going to be more slash on the ground.
Yep.
We know that.
Well,
it's going to happen.
I don't want to call it slash. I just want to call it structure.
Yeah.
I just changed the name of it because now it has a purpose.
Yeah.
It has a purpose. It has a role. I'm not going to apologize that it looks ugly to you, but consider it as structure opposed to slash.
Yeah.
And a mess opposed to bedding opportunity.
Yeah.
Because in most situations, you and I both, we know this. If you go from closed canopy and you start putting some structure, treetops on the ground, you have better bedding than what you had when the tree was standing.
Yeah.
So what are we complaining
for? Oh, and
there is
so much daylight coming in right now. The one area they've cut so far, it's like, oh, yeah, this is looking good.
Yeah. Sweet.
This is looking good. So.
Sweet. Well, that honestly hits us really well on time right there. But I think there's a lot of great points and stuff for people to learn from and to gain knowledge about expectations, execution, and what they should just be looking for when they enter into a timber management to the degree that they need to, instead of dipping toes in. We see so much of the, everyone thinks that they're buying really good marketable timber because that's what all real estate listings say, right? But in reality, it's okay and it's necessary for as a landowner or potential buyer of real estate, you need to know that sometimes you need to go in and clean house. Sometimes things just need to be course corrected and given that facelift to improve things for the long term.
And it can't be said enough. If you aren't experienced in forestry, have somebody come help you.
Absolutely.
Get a forester to come in and help you because you can. Timber management is not something that you can change in a year or two.
Right.
If you mess up, it's going to last a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be the same.
Right.
And the mistakes can be long-lasting in timber management.
Right.
And that's where it's like, have somebody help you.
Yep, Absolutely.
Bring in help that is knowledgeable, an experienced person, because if you don't know what you're doing, you can screw it up really fast.
And I think that we should begin to think beyond the monetary value, although it does hold it. I don't mean to place above the monetary value if that's what you're in the logging for. I'm not telling you how to prioritize your goals. But I'm just saying give more weight in your goals to the legacy you can leave with the property. Leave a mark on your property that says, I did things right, I did things intentionally, and I improved it when I cut trees and when I followed up and I did the TSI and the prescribed fire. I changed this place for the good. And I think that you take that extra little step of intentionality into land management and you've done really good stuff. So, Chad, anything else before we wrap it up?
I think that's it.
Cool deal. Well, I appreciate you coming on. And everyone, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully this was encouraging to get out there, branch out, gain some knowledge, as well as some applied learning to your own property. So thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next week.